Well, again, good morning, everyone, to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I'm Judge Wheelock. I'm presiding today on a panel with Judges Louise Bjorkman and Jennifer Frisch. This is our third case today and our last case on today's calendar. And I'll have the clerk call this last case now.
Calling case 822-1254, State of Minnesota Respondent versus Marcus Jacoby Moore Appellant.
Counsel, as you probably know, you both will have 15 minutes for your argument with an additional 5 minutes of rebuttal for counsel for the appellant. There's a timer on the center podium. Feel free to adjust the podium for your comfort. The height goes up and down on the side. And I ask you to please introduce yourselves at the beginning of your argument and the party that you represent for the purposes of our recording today, and so we know how to refer to you in the proper pronunciations of your names. So, counsel for appellant, you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Bruce Rivers on behalf of the appellant, Your Honor. This is a case about a traffic stop. And the traffic stop here, the basis for the traffic stop was a failure to yield. Under conditions where the defendant in this case was, the motorist, was in front of an unmarked Suburban. And there were four deputies in the Suburban responding to a joint operation with Minneapolis Police Department. These were Hennepin County Sheriffs. We submitted as part of the record all the video exhibits that were used at the district court level. And the argument made by respondent is that lights and sirens were on and that the appellant failed to yield. And that gave rise to the traffic stop in this case. When you look at what happened here, as the defendant was approaching, I think, 3rd Street from 1st Avenue and taking a left onto 3rd Street, you can see in the video that there's, the body cams from the officers that were in that Suburban for the sheriff's office. Their lights are never on when they're on the roadway. Their lights come on when they turn into the parking lot.
Counsel, I saw it a little differently. I watch all the videos several times. In one of the videos, I could see the flash of the light as soon as the body cam was turned on, like the flash of the siren, of the lights. So, I mean, if I can see it, and I'm speaking for myself and not for my colleagues, I'm wondering how the district court's finding could be clearly erroneous based on that record, or based on maybe a record that could be inconclusive.
Well, let's talk about that, because the appellant is in the far left. Let's say that that's the case. Let's go there. He's in the far left lane. He takes an immediate left, and he allows the Suburban to go past him. So he's that's what the statute requires, is when you're on a one-way, the quickest – And there's cars parked there, so he can't be right out against the curb. So and that's exactly what the officer does. He goes past him. But here's what happens when he does. You can see that in the video, in the very first video on that submitted to the court, the officer points to the parking lot. They're not pulling Mr. Moore over. They're pointing into the direction of, this is where we need to go. And then Mr. Moore pulls in, but then when he pulls in, that's when you see the flash of the lights from the Suburban.
Let me ask it a different way. So my view, the district court's view, your view may all be a little bit different. My colleagues even may have a different view of the video. But there's testimony from the officers that lights and sirens were on. So when the video perhaps might be inconclusive as to whether lights and sirens on. Definitely inconclusive as to sirens because of the silence at the very beginning of all of the videos. When the video's inconclusive, but there's testimony, and the district court credits the testimony, how are we we at the appellate court now in a position to say no, that's clearly erroneous.
Well, look at the testimony. On page 19 of the transcript, Lovejoy says that the lights didn't come on until 22 seconds into the video. And that's exactly when you can, and then there's more testimony that comes on where he talks about, at this point, I think the question is, at this point, your lights have been on for 5 seconds. And that is when he's in the parking lot. So the testimony that he turned them on when he went into the parking lot is actually consistent with the video. And just so you know, that testimony was elicited on direct, not on cross.
Well, part of that testimony was in response to particular clips of the video that, I mean, and that wasn't there broader testimony from the detective about overall why they noticed the Tahoe, because it wasn't getting out of the way as they were speeding on the streets long before they pulled into the parking lot, or at some point before they pulled into the parking lot.
Yeah, but I don't, you got to take into account that this is a an unmarked Suburban, and there's a green light, and it's really unclear from the testimony if we go with what you're talking about, exactly where the failure to yield actually occurs.
What about the officer when he stops the vehicle, when he goes up to the car and confronts your client, and he says, "We lit you up 100 yards back. Why isn't that enough?"
He didn't say that.
I heard it. We lit you up 100 yards back.
His testimony at the hearing was, "I don't recall if I had them on at this time or not."
I'm talking about what I saw in the video. The officer says to your client, "You didn't yield. We lit you up 100 yards back."
I'm just trying to remember it adequately, and I'm not trying to challenge your memory, but I think what he says, you got to stop when there's a cop behind you. I think that's what he said, if I remember right. But at that point, they're in the parking lot, and it had already occurred. And if you look back on, he talks about it records video but not audio, talking about his body camera, and it's either 30 seconds or a minute, and I'm not sure on that. And he's talking, at this point in time, do you have your lights and sirens on active as well as at this time? I don't recall. One of the things that the state has argued is that they had their lights on, they were heading to the scene, then they turned them off because they were called off of the scene, and then turned them back on. Let's just go with that for a second and say that that is what happened. What's a motorist supposed to do at that point? At the point where the Suburban is behind my client, with the appellant, I know we disagree a little bit, but and the reason I say this is because the lights are not on when he's behind him before he turns onto 3rd Street. He turns onto 3rd Street and then turns into the parking, and at that point, they're right next to each other, and the appellant pulls into the lot because he's going to park there and go to the club. That's what he said. And when you watch him, the Suburban, pull in, that's when you see the flash of the lights.
Mr. Rivers, did you make that argument to the district court that there was a period of time during which the lights and sirens were not on, that the officers had them on, turned them off, and then turned them back on again?
Well, I didn't argue this to the district court.
Okay. But then was it in the record below?
I'm trying to remember. I'm not sure if that was specifically argued. Okay. I know that's the position. That was the position of the state, and it's not supported by the video evidence. So, if you and I just think it's so clear when you watch the video, and if you, and especially if you watch all of them together, and you watch the officers' reactions to what they're doing. And I think what happened here, well, I'm not going to conjecture on what I think happened. What the video shows happened is even if their lights were on First Avenue before they get to Third Street, they're not behind my client or the appellate for long, and he pulls to the left, allowing the officers to go by on the right-hand side, which is what they do. But then he pulls into the lot in front of them, and I think that's where they're thinking that he's not yielding to them. So if you take away the failure to yield, there's no reasonable articulable suspicion for the stop. And if you have a bad stop here, you've got to suppress the rest of the evidence. So unless there are other questions, I'll save some time for rebuttal. Is that all right?
Let me just ask you, if we disagree, if we find that the record supports the district court's findings with respect to the basis for the stop and the failure to yield, I'm curious about the asking a driver to get out of the car. You don't have to have probable cause to arrest somebody to ask a driver who's been lawfully stopped for a traffic violation to get out of their car.
No, you don't. But I think to expand the stop, you need to have further cause.
But is it an expansion to ask a driver to get out of a validly stopped car?
I think it is in this case.
Why would this be different than Askaruth and the other cases that I've always understand the law to permit police officers to ask someone to step out of their car?
Under this circumstances, I think it was an expansion of the stop, and I don't think that they had the cause. The basis for doing that was twofold. They smelled marijuana, and they saw some marijuana shake in the car.
He also admitted that he was an unlicensed driver.
He did. Well, yeah, he said, I don't have my license. I'm on the driver diversion program. But there's plenty of testimony that didn't concern the officers.
But isn't that a basis to take him out of the
car?
Isn't
their articulated basis.
Does that matter? It's an objective standard, isn't it?
It is.
I have a clarifying question. Just based on what you said a few moments ago, is it your position that your client pulled over into the left side of the street, paused, as in he was yielding to the lights and sirens, and then chose to pull into the lot?
Yeah, I think when you watch the actual movements of both vehicles, the black Tahoe or the blue or black Tahoe that the appellant was in makes a left turn, and there is a pause, and then proceeds in there ostensibly to let the other car go by. Because, I mean, why would the officer go around him? I mean, they're not motioning for him to pull over. They're not trying to get his attention. They're not doing anything to the appellant at that point. And it's not until they pull into the parking lot, and that's when their lights go on. So, and their lights go on almost immediately when they get in the parking lot because the appellant pulls in front of them.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, you can reserve 2 minutes.
Thank you.
I don't see any other questions at this time. So, counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. The clock is reset, and please begin when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, Assistant Hennepin County Attorney Peter Marker for the state respondent. Your Honors, I think appellant is making a credibility argument with regard to the support for the stop. Trial court made very specific factual findings. Judge Quam, after reviewing the video and listening to the testimony, lights and siren were turned on as soon as the call was received to clear traffic on the street to respond to a Code 3 incident. The trial court made the point that it was early in the response that that the officers came upon the black Tahoe, which was in front of their vehicle, which failed to stop, pull over, or attempt to clear the public roadway.
Was there an ability? I have watched the videos also, and at least from the video in Exhibit 1, it looks like there are cars on the left side of the road. What was the appellant driver supposed to do?
Well, I don't think there's a factual finding that he didn't have the ability to pull over and get out of the way. If you're measuring that against the court's factual finding, I think implicit in the court's factual finding was that he did have the ability to get out of the way or at least stop so that the officers could make their way around him. And I think that's what's required by the statute.
There's a factual finding by the district court that the tone of the sirens was changed. And I did not see I may have missed it, but I did not see a factual basis for that anywhere in the record. Can you identify where that is?
Your Honor, as to that particular finding, I'm not sure if I made a note of that. Let me look here quickly.
I don't recall it from the testimony, and I certainly didn't hear it in the video.
Well, I seem to remember that from the testimony, Your Honor, but I apologize. I can't point to a page. What I do remember from the video, Your Honor, is that the court is correct. The officer told him that he lit him up 100 yards back, which corroborates, that's not a factual finding, but it certainly corroborates the testifying sergeant's testimony that the action occurred on the public street. Now, appellant keeps talking about, well, he couldn't testify that he had his lights on at this point in time. But that point in time was the point in time at which they were at the entry to this private parking lot. And so the officer wasn't recanting his testimony that he had had his lights on earlier. He was just saying, look, at that point in time, I can't tell if I do or not. Perhaps he had turned them off. And I think a fair inference from the record is that he may have turned them off because they were called off of the Pizza Luce call. I don't know that. That's an inference. But again, that goes to the credibility determination that the trial court made that the lights and sirens were on as the officers were responding to the area on the public streets, and that the appellant failed to yield at that point in time, justifying the stop, which did occur in a private parking lot. But by that point in time, the illegal conduct had already occurred on the public street. And so the fact that the stop itself occurred in a public lot or a private lot is immaterial. And that's how the trial court viewed the case, I think, and that there's support in the record for that.
What's the strongest evidence in support of the district court's findings on the fact that the traffic violation occurred on the street?
The officer's testimony. The court's seen the video. It's, you know, they're body cams of officers that are sitting inside of a car. They're not great. They are helpful to some degree, but they're not great. So it's the officer's clear testimony that the lights were on. Happy to answer any further questions on that issue. If there aren't any, I would just move on to the second issue briefly and ask the court to acknowledge that it is not always, and it's I think most of the time under our jurisprudence, it is not an expansion of the stop to request a driver to exit a vehicle. And so our United States Supreme Court has said that if it is an expansion, it's de minimis. It does not require probable cause. But here, where the officer asks the appellant from the vehicle, it's certainly supported by reasonable, articulable basis to do so. The odor of marijuana, the fact that he's an unlicensed driver, there is some testimony about nervousness. That's difficult to see in the video, frankly. But at that point, they ask him from the vehicle, and that there is just that's a lawful request based on our case law. It's to the extent that it is an expansion of the stop, and Ortega, Pennsylvania versus Mims, those cases suggest that it is not an expansion of the stop. But even if it was, it's supported by the factual record here. And it's underlied by reasonableness. And so, and that's when appellant steps out of the car and the gun falls from his lap. There was no search. So the only question is whether or not the request, whether or not the stop was lawful. If it wasn't, then we don't need to go further. Whether or not the request for him to step from the vehicle was lawful, and I think under our case law, it plainly was on the facts of this case, given what the officers knew. And indeed, even if they wouldn't have smelled the odor of marijuana, or then they still could have asked him from the vehicle because he was an unlicensed driver. So I would ask that, respectfully ask the court to affirm the trial court's findings here. The stop was lawful, and the subsequent actions after the stop are supported by the facts and the case law. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. So we'll turn back to attorney for appellant, and you can put 7 minutes on the clock per his request.
The this court asked the question, what's the strongest evidence to support the court's finding? And respondent's counsel said the testimony of the officer. And when asked on page 20 of the transcript, I'm going to pause here at 27 seconds. So your lights and sirens have been on at least 5 seconds or so at this point. Is that correct? And he says, correct. And when asked earlier on page 19, at this point, and this is at 22 seconds roughly, at this point in time, do you have your lights and sirens active as well at this time? I don't recall if I had them at this time or not. And so what we're talking about here is, did he fail to yield on the roadway, or did he fail to yield anywhere else? And I think it is absolutely crystal clear that he did not have his lights on until he got into the parking lot. And if he did have his lights on at some point and turn them off, it would be unfair to hold a driver, you know, to a standard where you don't know what's going on behind you. He certainly couldn't see the lights that are behind the officer. It would only be the lights that would be on, and because it's an undercover vehicle, that would be on the grill. But
what is the significance of turning the lights off, really? Because if the lights are on at any point in time, then the lights and sirens are on at any point in time, then you would agree that the driver would have been required to yield, or at least initiate steps to yield.
Yeah, and I think he did. I think when he turns onto Third Street, he absolutely allows the officer to get by him, and I think it's telling when you watch that, at least that first video, because it's the driver, it's the viewpoint of the officer in the rear driver's side seat, in the rear passenger driver's side seat. And you can see the driver or the passenger in the front passenger seat, that detective or that deputy, pointing not to the appellate, but pointing to the driveway or where they're supposed to go. And so the record is really incomplete, for lack of a better word, as to how long the lights were on, where the appellant was when the lights were on, according to make this a valid failure to yield. And the best evidence is I don't know. And then, and so if you watch the evidence presented in the form of exhibits, and you watch the, you can clearly see when he enters that parking lot and those, the strobes, because that's when the lights go on, and they're all part of the same thing. You don't see that on the side of the road. You don't see that when they're side to side. You don't see that when he's behind him. So to me, it just is so clear when you actually look at everything. It's not a valid stop. It's clearly erroneous. And I think this court should reverse and reverse the conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the argument today and the briefs that were submitted. Thank you for that. The case is submitted, and we will issue an opinion within the statutory time frame. And that ends this morning's oral calendar, so, and ends our calendar, period. So the court is in recess. Thank you.